So pleased to welcome to the program 8th District Congressman Stephen Lynch remotely to chat about the coronavirus pandemic and how it's impacting the 8th District here in Massachusetts and how it might be impacting you personally as well. So Congressman, great to virtually see you. Thank you so much.
Good to be with you virtually, Joe. My pleasure.
As is the norm now for social distancing, of course. Can you talk a little bit about how your district right now is dealing with the pandemic? What are you hearing from your constituents?
Well, we've got some real challenges, like everywhere. So I've been in direct contact with Mayor Koch down in Quincy. We met with his public health and his public safety team down in the basement of City Hall, properly distance from one another, of course. And I think he's doing a great job down there in terms of he's really got a war room there, you know, trying to deal with all of the challenges. I've also had an opportunity to visit with a lot of our health center personnel, Cynthia Sierra, who runs Manit, not only in Quincy, but also in Hull as well. So we've been working with her. They've been short of PPE, mostly the N95 masks. So luckily we were able to acquire about 20,000 masks from Procter & Gamble, Gillette, the parent company for Gillette. They have a plant here in South Boston, but Gary Coombs, who's the CEO for P&G, his team got on board. We had a conversation. He asked me how he could help. And so that was our most needed commodity was the N95 mask that Cynthia and others needed. So we sent a couple thousand down to Cynthia, and also sent I think a couple thousand down to South Shore Hospital that needed it. We're sending some down to Milton Hospital and other various health centers and hospitals in my district. So trying to spread out the masks as much as possible. And also we've been really busy. I didn't realize we had so many people from our district that travel so widely around the globe, but we've had families stuck in Morocco, big groups, student groups. We've had groups on the islands off of Honduras. So we've been able to slowly get some of those people back. We've been able to get charter planes authorized because many of these countries have shut down their airlines and have no longer allowed passenger planes to go in and out. So we've had to take extraordinary measures in some cases, but we're gradually getting everyone home, which is a good thing.
We heard Governor Baker not too long ago express frustration with the federal government, quote unquote, outbidding states for this personal protective equipment. Are there steps being taken to mitigate that?
Well, I wish I could say yes, but not necessarily. So we're still in this bidding war. I'm on a committee on national security, also on transportation. Do a fair amount of interaction with China. So we've reached out to some of our friends there. The Port of Boston has a long and strong relationship with China in terms of import-export. So we've relied on our relationships with the mayor of Shanghai and also with the ambassador to China from China in New York, who's Ambassador Huang. And he's been very, very good. He's also keenly involved in the port here in Boston. So the challenge is there are so many scams going on with counterfeit product, especially the N95 masks being sold online, that you really have to have somebody on the ground in China who can make sure that the manufacturer is certified by the by the Chinese government and by the FDA. Okay. And then you've got to have an exporter who's also got the necessary certification so that you don't, you know, pay your money and end up like Spain did with a large shipment of PPE that was unusable and ineffective. So we want to avoid that. But I've been working very closely with the Baker administration They've got a good team on board. So between us, we've been using our contacts to try to get larger shipments flown in, and then some that you can obviously bring in larger quantities if you use shipping, ocean shipping. So we've gone that route as well. Although the timeline from Shanghai Harbor to Boston Harbor is about 35 days. So there's obviously some downside, but we do know 35 days out, we're going to need some of this stuff. So we still have pursued those options as well.
Yeah, a lot of people have expressed to me surprise that this country, you know, the most powerful first world country, is so lacking in some of these basic needs. Was this surprising to you as well?
Yeah, so the committee that I chair on national security is actually doing a hearing and an investigation on how we have exported our domestic manufacturing capacity in critical goods like the masks, like the ventilators. And so we want to do a whole stem to stern review of the products that we no longer make in sufficient quantities here. We also want to look at the stockpile and figure out what is the role of the federal government. I happen to think, look, especially in a case of a pandemic, it doesn't stop at a state border. So having the individual states dealing with this is not efficient. You really need the federal government to act as the quarterback and make sure they have a sufficient stockpile of all of this equipment and all of these supplies, so that as hotspots arrive, you know, such as New York and Washington State, each state will have a minimum requirement on their own. You need state officials to be responsible as well, but they would have a basic allotment that they would have to produce and maintain in their own depots, their own reservoirs, and then the federal government can supplement that. But we have been lacking in terms of that coordination, and also we've been lacking in the distribution process, tracking and getting out the equipment to states and cities that actually need it.
Yeah, I can't help but think a lot of folks are calling this the new 9/11 moment, and you know, lessons learned back then in 2001 are still with us today. So do you think lessons being learned right now will stay with us in the future?
Oh yeah, I believe so. I think we all understand the impact of this, and we're not halfway through it yet. We've got coronavirus. The White House coronavirus team did a conference call with us yesterday, and it was the first time I heard Boston mentioned as one of the cities that they're worried about. They mentioned Chicago, Detroit, and Boston, as well as Washington, D.C., and Baltimore. But that's not a list you want to be on, right? And I think it has struck home with a lot of mayors and governors and legislatures that really understand now. They've got a wake-up call. So I think you'll see a very robust response to this. And we want to make sure the next time, if there is an echo of this next fall, we want to make sure we have the infrastructure in place and the production capacity in place to deal with this domestically, not having to rely on our foreign allies to provide that product.
I did want to ask you about an issue I know is very near and dear to your heart, is how this is impacting the veterans community. You're aware of the situation at the Holyoke Soldiers Home here in Massachusetts. The military members and veterans across the country are being adversely impacted.
Yeah, we're very worried about that. So one of the first things I did, matter of fact, when I left Quincy City Hall, I went down to Brockton, to my VA facility in Brockton, met with Vincent Ng, who's our regional director for the VA. And also we Skyped in the other VA hospital so that we could get input from West Roxbury as well. They aren't, I think, fully equipped either. So in that batch of PPE that we just got from Procter & Gamble, we sent down an allotment for the Jamaica Plain VA hospital and as well as Brockton and West Roxbury in my district. So trying to help them out as much as possible. But they've got a very vulnerable population there. They've got a lot of older veterans, right. World War II, Korea especially. And we want to make sure that we do the right thing by our veterans. We really do. The employees down there have been absolutely fantastic. The nurses, the therapists, the doctors at the VA, absolutely courageous in terms of rendering that service. So we're very proud of them, but we've got some challenges as well.
I did want to ask you, Congressman, if you could explain the economic impacts that this is having and what's already been done with the stimulus package and another stimulus package that's currently being debated.
Yeah, so we got another report today on unemployment, another 6.7 million people applying. So I think we're up to 17 million since we've been counting after the national emergency was announced. So we do have enhanced unemployment benefits out there for people. The federal government has extended the normal unemployment period by an additional 13 weeks. So there'll be 39 weeks in total. And for people who were going to receive unemployment benefits, there's a $600 payment on top of that that will be made for the next few months, trying to get people through the worst of this. But if we continue to see these numbers each week of new applicants, I know companies are trying to do their best, but as you see the number of unemployed grow, we're going to have to think about an even stronger and longer response to that to get through this entirely. We know that it will take a while for people to get those checks out in some cases. We also have a one-time rebate check going out. Those should begin to go out on April 13th, Monday, April 13th. But for people who are on Social Security and might not have filed taxes in the last couple of years, it's very important that those people have contact with the IRS in some fashion. We're trying to coordinate with Social Security, get them together with the IRS. So anybody who's getting a Social Security check should be able to get one of these rebate checks. I would say that those checks on the 13th or thereabouts will go out first to the people who have direct deposit. That's the easiest for the IRS. So the rebate checks will go out. There are 60 million people who have their IRS income tax refund direct deposited into their account. So the IRS has that information. 60 million people will get checks that week of the 13th. The problem is that there are 150 million Americans who file taxes every year. So there are 90 million people, and there are people on Social Security that will have to get a paper check if they don't have automatic deposit. And the IRS right now can only process about 5 million checks, paper checks, per week. So it's going to take a while to get the rest of those checks out. So if you have the ability to get your direct deposit information to the IRS, it may make a big difference on how soon you get that check.
Good advice, certainly. Of course, the Small Business Administration is going to be overwhelmed very quickly with a request for assistance. Are they prepared to deal with that, do you think?
Yeah, so we originally put out $340 billion to the Small Business Association. But this is not going smoothly. The reason is that the SBA, their normal book of business is about $24 billion a year. That's what they usually guarantee. That's the number of loans they usually guarantee. $24 billion. We've just authorized them to expand to $340 billion. And so they've got the same number of employees. They've only got 11 employees in New England. So you can see how those 11 people are going to be extremely busy. We've also authorized them to hire more people to try to get that out. But a couple of things are happening. One, the PPP program, which is the Payroll Protection Program, allows small businesses, 500 employees and lower, 500 employees or less to access that program. There are several different aspects to it. One is a disaster recovery loan. Another one is the payroll protection, whereas if you keep your employees on the payroll, you're eligible for this program. The problem is we have an awful lot of businesses in our area that are more than 500 employees. And like I said before, SBA is struggling. They're scrambling. They're working very hard to get that money out the door. Basically, they guarantee the loans, but the loans come from individual banks. So if you have South Shore Savings Bank, or you have Santander or Eastern Bank, and that's your regular banker, you go to them, and the SBA will provide a 100% guaranteed loan, but they are the issuer. So you have to work with your local bank. That's how that works.
Okay.
Today, we have a negotiations ongoing with the Senate. We're trying to expand that because we have a number of businesses in Quincy that have more than 2,500 employees. And so they've been left out. So we expanded that program overnight with the Fed and with the Treasury to make sure that those businesses are similarly included. And so the guidance hasn't come down. We received that information last night, but we'll have more information as we go forward. And the SBA and Treasury and the Fed will be announcing what the details are on that. But we imagine it will also be pushed out by the SBA.
Do you think, Congressman, that this economy is going to bounce back at some point and recover to where it was before this pandemic hit?
At some point, yes. However, it's tough to have the economy bounce back when you're telling people to stay home, right? Don't go to restaurants, don't go to the movies, don't go shopping. So it will really bounce back when we have a situation that allows all of that normal activity to return. And I only see that happening once we have the vaccine fully deployed, or there are a number of drugs that look promising, that they're anti-influenza drugs that are in study right now. There's one very promising one that's at the MGH, Mass General Hospital, Brigham and Women's, and UMass Medical that's being studied, that I've been working getting PPE for the people conducting those studies. So if something like that emerges, that would be a game changer. And I think once people felt in their hearts that was safe to go out and they wouldn't be risking the health of their families, I think then you'll see the beginning of a return to normalcy, similar to we had before the coronavirus struck. But that may be months.
Yeah, it's a lot of unanswered questions and uncharted territory that we're all in right now, certainly. Without getting too political, I just wanted to ask, is there a spirit of bipartisanship right now in Washington with Senate, with Congress, and with the administration, or is there friction?
Well, there's a little bit of both, okay. But I do see a lot of collaboration, right? So we had this first coronavirus bill go out. It went out 415-2. So okay. That's pretty broad. There was a little bit of difference in priority between the House and the Senate. You know, the Senate has a bill right now for small businesses and economic relief. And the House seems to be coming more at the health aspects of this, figuring that, you can't stimulate the economy if you're telling people to stay home. So we want to address that health aspect of this. So they're both necessary, right? They're both necessary. I agree with the economic stimulus, but I strongly believe in the healthcare aspects of this, that we've got to save lives, right? That's the number one thing. We've got to save lives, protect our families, and then we've got to get people back to work and allow them to have a good quality of life again. So they're both necessary. I don't think they're mutually inclusive at all. I don't even think you need to do them both in the same bill. I could agree on Senator McConnell's bill and have it go forward, as long as I know that he agrees that the healthcare aspects, the PPE, the vaccine, the hospital, the healthcare money for community health centers like Manatt down in Quincy, that money is going to be coming because they need it. They need it. And if we had just a gentleman's agreement, a gentlewoman's agreement on that, you know, I could see us letting the financial stimulus go out first and then the healthcare bill go out immediately following.
One thing that, maybe not on top of people's minds right now, but will have an impact is we're in the middle of a federal census year. And I know folks are concerned about this causing some artificially low numbers when response to the census. Is that a concern also?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got two things going on right now. Matter of fact, earlier this morning, I had one of those Zoom, like we're doing here, conferences with Megan Brennan, who is the Postmaster General for the United States Postal Service. And two of the things that we're worried about right now, the census, and that was a very astute question, and then the election. Because in November, we may still be struggling with this in a big way. So we're concerned that vote by mail has to be a major component of maintaining our Democratic election in November. Mm. So we've got a plan to try to get some additional resources to the post office so that they can conduct a very robust census survey, and also make sure we have people in place that can help with the vote by mail program that's going to be necessary. So, yeah, so that's a huge issue. We currently have a $25 billion assistance program for the post office in the House bill. It was dropped from the Senate bill last time, but we're going to go back at it again. You have to remember, the United States Postal Service today, and we're talking about our letter carriers, our clerks, our supervisors, our mail handlers that do the packages, they deliver the mail, and we're talking medical supplies and medical equipment, to every single home and business in America 6 days a week. God bless them. And so we talked about the need for gloves for them because they're, you know, handing off packages and picking up packages on a moment-to-moment basis, door-to-door. And so we want to make sure our employees are protected while they do that, and recognize that they're going to need resources to stay safe to keep this economy going. So they are very much foremost in our minds right now.
Sure. I did want to ask you a little bit about the situation on board the USS Theodore Roosevelt, and I know that you are looking into the situation there with the captain sounding the alarm about the virus outbreak on board.
Yeah. So there's two aspects of this. One, I'm looking at the readiness issue for the United States Navy and the Department of Defense. We've got people scattered all over the globe. When the USS Theodore Roosevelt deployed from Naval Base San Diego, they did not have any coronavirus tests on board. And there was concern out there at that time. But nevertheless, they left port without any tests. They set into Guam. They did a couple of visits. When I originally had spoken to or written to Secretary Esper on March 26th about doing a survey of our naval assets and where we were with equipment, that was the moment. On that day, Captain Crozier said he had 8 positive cases on board the carrier, USS Theodore Roosevelt. 1 week later, he had 173 cases on board. So I don't think we were fully prepared. I don't think there was a protocol in place for Captain Crozier to follow. And so he was looking for some direction there and was not getting it. So he made a decision. He made an executive decision to protect his people. He had been slowly offloading when he had 1, 2, 3, 5, 8 sailors. He was offloading them to Guam to the Naval Hospital right there on the pier. But when you get 173, you've got a much different situation. So we've been asking for all the information we can get. You know, oddly enough, you know, I've never been in the military, but in this job that I have, I'm the chair of the National Security Subcommittee. So I spend a lot of time with our troops. I've actually flown onto, I've tail hooked onto three different carriers, wow. You know, the Abraham Lincoln, the Truman, the Enterprise, when they were each in rotation in the Strait of Hormuz, about 60 miles off the coast of Iran. And I, you know, I've spent plenty of overnights on those carriers. And the folks in the Navy call their beds racks mm-hmm. for a reason. They're literally stacked on each other. It's unbelievable. The limited amount of space, probably 2 feet deep, where they just slide in. And then there's another person on top of that, another person on top of that. It is really close quarters. And so social distancing is not an option on these carriers, on any of these ships. I've been on plenty of carriers, destroyers. So it's not possible. In the gangways, in the, you know, dining facilities, they're right on top of each other. So we really need a special protocol for, you know, pandemics and pandemic threats aboard naval vessels. And I'm not sure we've really thought it out like we should have up to this point. You know, I don't believe that what Captain Crozier did rose to the level of being removed and being publicly chastised in front of his men and women, the people that he was commanding and charged to protect. I think that was uncalled for. But what I would like to do is, rather than have another political intervention by myself, by my committee, or by President Trump, I would like the Navy to get its information together, share it with us, let us know the information you had, the decisions that were made. And I think there were other options than relieving him of duty and embarrassing him under the Captain Crozier under those circumstances. So that's where I am. I'm looking for information. I don't want to prejudge the entire situation. I know there's been a lot in the press, but oftentimes I find when you get the official report, there is some variance between what has been reported in the press and what is factual.
Sure. Finally, Congressman, any just final remarks for folks in your district and what you'd like them to keep to heart at during this time?
You know, just to remind people, we will get through this, right? We just got to hang together. You need to social distance. You need to, if Mayor Koch tells you, you know, if you're a business and you should close down, you need to close down. This is to protect the most vulnerable of us, among us, right? And, you know, let's follow the CDC guidelines. Let's get through this together. You know, I know a lot of people in this Easter season have come to rely on their faith, and that's a good thing. You know, and you, I know Passover is upon us, and Ramadan will be upon us soon enough. We've got a big mosque down in Quincy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in these times that we all tend to rely on our faith, that would just, you know, call upon us all to be better to each other. And you know, the number one thing you can do to protect yourselves and your loved ones and our communities is really to practice that social distancing. Don't go outside without a mask if you're going out for a walk. And, you know, just use common sense. I think that's the appropriate thing. For me, you know, it's a tremendous honor to represent the city of Quincy and the entire 8th Congressional District. I've got a wonderful district and great, great people, a tremendous history, and I'm proud to do the job I do every single day. We're still working on trying to get enough PPE for all our nurses. They have been absolutely heroic. Our first responders, our police and fire and EMS throughout the districts, our doctors, you know, remember them. Remember them, right? Because by doing our job and limiting the contagion, we're keeping them safe and making sure that we're not wasting resources and putting people at risk unnecessarily. It's going to be a tough enough job as it is to get this done, but I know we can do it. I know we can do it. I know, look, we have some great patriots in the city of Quincy, and, you know, I just know we can get this done. I think about John Gillis, you know, United States Marine Corps, salt of the earth, great American, you know, the tradition. He was a great reflection of Quincy, you know, what's best about America as well. So, you know, in his spirit, the way he handled himself, and you've got great leadership down there in Quincy that I'm proud to be a part of the delegation. So let's bring out the best in Quincy and bring out the best in the 8th District and the best in America. Let's respond to this in the fashion that the greatest generation would have responded to it, right? Let's dig down deep and do the patriotic thing, do the right thing for our neighbors and for our country. That's all I got.
That's well said. Well, I can't say anymore. I really appreciate your time. I want to wish you, your family, and your staff a very happy, healthy Easter season, and hopefully we can meet in person again soon.
Let's hope so. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for your time and thanks for your courtesy. Happy Easter, everyone. Happy Passover and happy Ramadan. Thank you.